Can we open our Bibles, if you have your Bibles with you, to Joshua chapter 8. Joshua is the sixth book of the Bible from the front. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, which is the fifth book, and then Joshua chapter 8. We are going through Joshua at the moment. We come now to quite a gruesome chapter on the destruction of a city. I'm not sure if you play Scrabble, but it's quite a handy word. AI is how it's pronounced. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Take the whole army with you and go up and attack Ai, for I have delivered into your hands the king of Ai, his people, his city, and his land. You shall do to Ai and its king as you did to Jericho and its king, except that you may carry off their plunder and livestock for yourselves. Set an ambush behind the city." So Joshua and the whole army moved out to attack Ai. He chose 30,000 of his best fighting men and sent them out at night with these orders. "Listen carefully. You are to set an ambush behind the city. Don't go very far from it. All of you be on the alert. I and all those with me will advance in the city. And when the men come out against us, as they did before, we will flee from them. They will pursue us until we have lured them away from the city, for they will say they are running away from us as they did before. So when we flee from them, you are to rise up from ambush and take the city. The Lord your God will give it into your hand. When you have taken the city, set it on fire. Do what the Lord has commanded. See to it you have my orders." Then Joshua sent them off. And they went to the place of ambush and lay in wait between Bethel and Ai, to the west of Ai. But Joshua spent that night with the people. Earlier the next morning, Joshua mustered his men, and he and the leaders of Israel marched before them to Ai. The entire force that was with them marched up and approached the city and arrived in front of it. They set up camp north of Ai with the valley between them and the city. Joshua had taken about 5,000 men and set them in ambush between Bethel and Ai to the west of the city. They had the soldiers take up their positions, all those in the camp to the north of the city and the ambush to the west of it. That night Joshua went into the valley. When the king of Ai saw this, he and all the men of the city hurried out early in the morning to meet Israel in battle at a certain place overlooking the Arabah. But he did not know that an ambush had been set against them behind the city. Joshua and all Israel led themselves to be driven back before them, and they fled toward the desert. All the men of Ai were called to pursue them, and they pursued Joshua and were lured away from the city. Not a man remained in Ai or Bethel who did not go after Israel. They left the city open and went in pursuit of Israel. And then the Lord said to Joshua, "Hold out towards Ai the javelin that is in your hand, for into your hand I will deliver the city." So Joshua held out his javelin towards Ai. As soon as he did this, the men in the ambush rose quickly from their position and rushed forward. They entered the city and captured it and quickly set it on fire. The men of Ai looked back and saw the smoke of the city rising against the sky. But they had no chance to escape in any direction, for the Israelites who had been fleeing toward the desert had turned back against their pursuers. For when Joshua and all Israel saw the ambush had taken the city and that smoke was going up from the city, they turned around and attacked the men of Ai. The men of the ambush also came out of the city against them, so that they were caught in the middle with Israelites on both sides. Israel cut them down, leaving them neither survivors nor fugitives, but they took the king of Ai alive and brought him to Joshua. When Israel had finished killing all the men of Ai in the fields and in the desert where they had chased them, and when every one of them had been put to the sword, all the Israelites returned to Ai. and killed all those who were in it. 12,000 men and women fell that day, all the people of Ai. For Joshua did not draw back the hand that held out his javelin until he had destroyed all who lived in Ai. But Israel did carry off for themselves the livestock and plunder of the city, as the Lord had instructed Joshua. So Joshua burned Ai and made it a permanent heap of ruins, a desolate place to this day. He hung the king of Ai on a tree and left him there until evening. At sunset, Joshua ordered them to take his body from the tree and throw it down at the entrance of the city gate. And they raised a large pile of rocks over it, which remains to this day. This is the word of God. Can we open our Bibles, Joshua 8? Let's read verse 1. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Take the whole army with you. Go up and attack Ai, for I have delivered into your hands the king of Ai, its people, his city, and his land." I've only ever once played a game of competitive football. I was in primary six in a little primary school in Paisley near Glasgow, and I was the goalkeeper. I remember the game extremely well. It was against a neighbouring school, St. Paul's. That's another story. The honour was at stake, the honour of the whole school, and I remember the scoreline very well. It was 22-0. Now, if you're the goalkeeper and you've seen 22 balls going past you, five of them weren't allowed, so it could have been 27, you realise that your future career as a professional footballer is in jeopardy. I have never played a game of competitive football since that day. That defeat ruined me as far as football was concerned. Now, I don't know about you, but have you been in a place in your life sometimes when you've done something and you've been somewhere and there has been no way back? You have felt that the thing has been so horrendous, or the set of circumstances are really so impossible, it's like a brick wall before you, and you have suffered such a defeat and humiliation that there is no way that you're going to recover from this. We all know, those of us who've been reading the book of Joshua together here on Sunday nights, we know that this is a sequel to a previous story. Ai was the 22-0. Ai was the St. Paul's team for the children of Israel. They tried to attack it before. It wasn't much of a city. It wasn't Jericho. It was small and insignificant. There wasn't much of an army. And yet they were absolutely hammered and they were routed. And more than that, there was an enemy within their own camp. Remember Achan there. Achan had stolen some stuff and God had dealt with Achan. It was a desperate situation. They had violated the covenant with God and God was extremely angry with them. And so it was a multi-layered level of defeat, wasn't it? There was a defeat militarily that Ai had destroyed them and humiliated them. And there was a defeat spiritually, because the God who had been so good to them, the God who had covenanted, who had committed to be their God, and he would, and yet they had simply disobeyed God. The whole nation here were in a state of sin. But we have got a hint that there is hope. We read in the last verse of the previous chapter that the Lord turned from his fierce anger. Poor Achan had to pay the price. Someone has to pay the price. But the theme then is moving on from defeat. And that's our plan this evening, that we're going to talk about that and we're going to apply it in two areas. We're going to apply it corporately because that largely is what the chapter is about. It is not just the defeat of Joshua. It's the defeat of a people. It's the defeat of a nation. And we find here, and indeed the Achan incident shows us that what happens with one person has ripple effects right through the congregation and right through the people. And so a whole people can suffer from defeat. There can be a corporate sense of doom and despair and despondency. I'm sure you've been in a church and you just need to walk in the door and you realize that there is some kind of uncanny darkness, a dark cloud over the whole corporate entity. That was the case here in the children of Israel. But also we'll notice how Joshua, the great military commander, moved on from his defeat. God worked in the life of the Israelites, but God also changed Joshua, and changed Joshua remarkably. I wonder tonight, are we conscious that our lives can change from being here in this service? Our lives can change from being exposed to the Word of God, that there is a sense of the miraculous, that something amazing could happen tonight. And so we'll look at tonight at this, and we'll notice that there are only 2 points to the sermon this evening, but as usual, 2-point sermons last as long as 3-point sermons. So don't build up too much hope. 2 things. The first thing we notice here is God reassures Joshua. God reassures Joshua. Now, how does he do this? He does it in 3 ways. First of all, he reassures Joshua by dealing with his fear. Look at verse 1. The Lord said to Joshua, there's no intermediary. God, I don't know how he does it, that's beyond the record here. God somehow communicates with Joshua. There is that intimacy with God. God is a God who speaks, you see. God is a God who constantly communicates with his people, and we say, well, we don't. Some folks say we don't hear the word of God today. At least it seems to be very rare. How does God speak to us today? He speaks to us through the Bible. The Bible is the breath of God. When we read the Bible, we experience the very breath of God. So God's talking to us tonight through the Bible. But God spoke to Joshua directly by some means, and God reminds him that things are going to be different in his life. Do not be afraid. Now, what was Joshua afraid of? He was a competent man. He was a military commander. He was a leader of people. Now, to be a military commander, you are never a shrinking violet. You are someone who really knows where to go. You are able to command men in this instance. You are ruthless in battle. You are certainly someone who never shows any fear. But wonder what he was afraid of. I think there's a little hint in the next phrase. Do not be discouraged. Discouraged. Now again, I think he was psychologically unhinged. I think he was spiritually hammered by what had happened in Ai. He thought, am I down and out? We live in a culture where we are taught to present as individuals. Isn't there this curriculum for excellence? And they speak about the 4 capacities, don't they, in Scottish education? And one of the 4 capacities, I'm told, is to make us confident individuals. And, you know, that's what our schools are supposed to do. They are to breed within us this air of confidence. You see, in American children, don't you? American children seem to be so much more competent and confident as they are able to present themselves and talk in public and all sorts of things. But, you know, your average Scottish child is really, you know, oppressed with humility. And even those of us who do present as confident, it's a bit of a mask, isn't it? Even those of us who are up front at things, even those of us who maybe tell other folk to be bold and be strong, for the Lord your God is with you. Sometimes there is a mask. Sometimes there is a professionalism. And we know that behind that there is just this Joshua moment, this fear and this discouragement. And the slightest thing can knock us back. Are you there tonight? Are you afraid? Are you afraid about what next week is going to bring? That new situation, or that situation that you are going to revisit after such a long time. And there are so many unknowns. Maybe it's a new location. Maybe it's a new job. Maybe it's a new friendship. Maybe it's a new situation in your health. The unknown there. And we are a bag of fears. And Joshua sensed this. He feared failure again. Now, the main failure that Joshua felt was not the failure of military competence. No, it went deeper than that. It was the sense that he would fail God and let God down again, that he would break the covenant again. And so he was discouraged at his own sense of sinfulness. He was discouraged, like the Apostle Paul, the good that I want to do, I can't do it, and that I don't want to do, I find myself doing that. It's a little bit speculative, but I wonder, was he tempted to have a wrong view of God? Are you tempted to have a wrong view of God? What's that? The view that God is a God who says one wrong move, one strike, and you're out. Or maybe your view of God is a little bit more benevolent than that. Three strikes and you're out. The wonderful thing about the gospel is that God is not a God of a second chance, but he's a God of a third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth. Not that we take God for granted in any way, of course not. But so often we find here that he is the God of a second chance, and maybe Joshua had forgotten about that. It's a really good book about Joshua, written by an American man called Dale Ralph Davis. Now, Dale Ralph Davis is a phenomenal preacher. Really is. And he's got a little book on Joshua, and in it he speaks of serpent theology. And one of the things that he says there is that serpent theology is a theology presented by Satan, remember, when he was tempting Adam and Eve. And one of the tenets of serpent theology is questioning the character and motive of God. In other words, did God really say you're not to eat of that tree? So what Satan does is he puts God in the wrong light, and he says God is a God of prohibition. God is a God who's a killjoy. God is a God who constantly wants to put your light out. I wonder, was Joshua a little bit like that? Yeah, whoa, I am finished here. What are you afraid of tonight? Is God bigger than your fears? Is God not with you? Now, this is not motivational speaking. I'm not some sort of poor man's Tony Robbins who is trying to get folk motivated. This is not pop psychology. God can say, do not be afraid because of who he is. He can say, do not be afraid. You live in a country house, and mum's there on her own. She's in the house. It's a December night. Husband's away, and she's in the house with Tommy. Tommy's four, and he's going about with a cowboy outfit on, and he's got a holster with a couple of guns. Mum hears a noise in the garden. She looks out, and there's a man there with a black balaclava. I hope you don't have nightmares after this. Tommy says, don't worry, Mum. I'm here. So often that's what we're like with our fears. I'm sure Tommy's a nice lad, but he can't cope with the lad with the balaclava, who's just the Avon boy coming to deliver an order, lest you have nightmares. Do not be afraid of who he is. God is truly almighty. He has the resources to say, do not be afraid. I mean, there are some things that we can say, oh, don't be afraid, but we don't have the power, we don't have the authority. You go into the surgery and someone says, don't be afraid. Well, then we don't have the authority. There may be things that we have to be extremely afraid of. Only God can say that. We find here then he deals with these fears. Have we not heard these words before? Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. We heard them in Deuteronomy 1:21. Remember when God commissions Moses at Kadesh Berea? He says the same thing to Moses, do not be afraid. When God commissions Joshua at the beginning of Joshua, he says to him the same words, do not be afraid. He says, look, you heard these words 40 years ago. Was I faithful? Was I with you all that time? Have I not been faithful? You messed up, Joshua. I didn't. You fell. God can't. You violated the covenant. God cannot violate the covenant. So move on. And God reassures Joshua by dealing with his fear. We hear these words again, don't we? We hear them on a mountainside. And there's a group of shepherds. Burly men, big men, and all of a sudden there's an angel appears in the sky. It's a Christmas story, isn't it? And the sky is full of angels. The original language says there are so many angels that it's blinding. The school is, I was going to say black with angels, but kind of white with angels. And the shepherds are terrified because this is an invasion from another realm. Angels from the realms of glory, the carol says. God says, do not be afraid. God reassures Joshua by dealing with his fear. But secondly, God reassures Joshua by assuring him of victory. Notice what it says, for I have delivered into your hands the king of Ai. How powerful failure can be in our own minds. I find DIY extremely stressful because there's a catalogue of failures. And, you know, you can only look in previous DIY experiments to things that almost work and things that largely work, but not quite. That's why until YouTube came in the scene, DIY terrifies me. There was a time when I fixed a washer in the tap. I wanted to save a little bit of money. It was a fiasco. The term Niagara Falls comes to mind. It was just a disaster. I can't do it. Fear because of past failure. God says, I have delivered into your hands the king of Ai. There is a resting in the competence of God. I love the words of Jesus in Matthew 27:28. You know them all. And this is important because this takes us into the heart of the gospel. And if there is one area that we need to be taught, it's here. Jesus said, come unto me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle in heart, for you will find rest for your soul, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Be honest. Is your Christian faith like that? Have you found your Christian faith to be restful? It's anything but a rest. It exhausts you. Takes the very stuffing out of you. Your Christian faith really sucks the energy out of you. If that's the case, there's something wrong. Because it's not supposed to be like that. You know these vacuum packs you're packing to go to America or something, you want to get everything into the suitcase, and you wrap it with this plastic stuff, and you get this vacuum pump, and you suck all the air out, and you have this wizened-looking garment. That's how it's like in church sometimes, isn't it? The air is sucked out of us, and we just are just lifeless, exhausted in our faith. Why is that? Because we've not understood a key element of the gospel, that is, it's Christ that carries the baton. That is, it's Christ who has done the work. It is, the power of the gospel is not in us. That we do not need to keep all the plates spinning. That the earth does not revolve around the axis of our activity. That the church of God is not built through our efforts. And if we work and work and work, as if we were rebuilding Troy again, then it will be successful. No, I'm not saying that we have to sit back and do nothing. I am not saying that at all. But what God is saying here, he says, look, I am going to take down Ai. He carries the guilt and the shame, not us. He went to the cross. The growth of the church and the weight of the kingdom is in his shoulders. I've said it before, folks, there are no vacancies in the Trinity. You do not have the competencies to run the world. You don't have the strength. You don't, frankly, have the intelligence. We don't even begin to do that because God is all wise. And so he can go on. He's assured of a victory because God does it. Now again, I'm not arguing for passivity. Joshua had to do things. He went up and he knocked the king of Ai flat. He got his army involved. But it is a God thing, isn't it? I've told the story often of the very first time I was in America. I came back, it was 1999. The exchange rate was phenomenal. Everything over there was half price. I remember going to Dillard's department store, and my kind of feminine side really soared into position because there were bargains everywhere. I loved shopping. It was so cheap, and I packed my suitcase with all this stuff. And I remember having this really, really heavy suitcase, and it was heavy. Coming out the airport at Inverness, dragging this suitcase, and the one who met me saying, what about the wheels? The what? The wheels. Oh, are there wheels in it? Oh, there are wheels. Dragging a case along when I had to rest in the wheels. Folk, I'm not being flippant, but that's what our lives are like in our Christian faith. We are dragging it along when he says, listen, come to me. Let me do the lifting. Burdens are lifted at Calvary, not imposed. God reassures Joshua by dealing with his fear, by assuring him of a victory, but thirdly by pointing out the next step. And then he gives him instructions. He says, look, you shall do to Ai. And he gives him an instruction to set up an ambush. And verse 3, so Joshua and the whole army moved out to attack Ai. He moved on. Now, I have every day, folk come and they say, I've got this problem. And you offer a solution. And you know that they're not really interested in the problem. They're not interested in the solution. No interest whatsoever. And they'll maybe go on to next person. Same problem. What do you think? This thing, person gives them a solution? No. Because they're in love with the problem. And we can be like that. We can be so in love with a problem that can be paralyzing. Verse 3, Joshua moved out to attack Ai. He moved on, he gets his army, he acts on what he hears. There's a development. Sometimes you've got to say, listen folks, listen team, let's move here. Let's make a decision. Let's break the status quo and let's take the next step. There is a certain comfort in staying where we are. But we find here God says, move on. I wonder, what about us? I don't know what your Sunday nights are like after being here at Smithton or whatever church you attend. I guess it's not you gather around as a family and say, oh, great sermon, two great sermons today. Let's get a bit of paper out. Let's, you know, as individuals in a family, let's ask ourselves, what specific areas are we going to change in our lives? Where are we going to move on? Where is there going to be development in our lives? What's God saying to us through the word today? God is often pointing out the next step. Now, I don't know what the next step is for you in your particular situation, but there is one. It is not staying where you are. The good news is that the first point is a lot longer than the second point. God reassures Joshua. Secondly, God restores the people. We're moving here from the individual to the corporate. There's a strong corporate element. We find there, verse 3, the whole army moved out to attack Ai. All through the passages, you've got that phrase, the whole army, or all the people, all the Israelites, men and women, they're all involved in this. Two things about this restoration. Number one, it was a creative restoration. Now, we find here that he's going to attack Ai, and what happens is that an army makes a lot of noise. The king of Ai moves out of the city, runs down the hill, and he's about to batter all the Israelites. Meanwhile, there's another lot of Israelites nip into the city, set it on fire. And it's a classic ambush. The king of Ai is the meat in the middle of a sandwich. And they eventually just have this kind of turkey shoot, although there's no turkeys and there's no shooting. But the inhabitants of Ai are all killed. Very different to Jericho. Remember how Jericho, they had to march around the city seven times. God does not do the same thing in the same way. God is a creative God, and there's a creative restoration. He dealt with Ai in a very different way to the way he dealt with Jericho. That's what God does. He's a God of infinite variety. No two fingerprints are the same. I got this new phone this week. People phone you up, and your contract's out, and you get this new phone, and they're getting ridiculous. The one I've got recognizes my fingerprint. And so anybody else can't get into my phone because they don't know the fingerprint. Of course, there's a little code. And of course, if you're clever, you've got all the same codes. The code for my PIN, my bank PIN, is the same as the code for my phone, 1864. It's all the same. So it recognized my fingerprint. My PIN's not 1864. Every fingerprint is different. Every sunset is different. That's the way God works. God had silence through Jericho. God uses military might and Ai. God deals with us. With some of us, we became Christians violently. It was a dramatic conversion experience. Some of us, one day we were not believers, the next day we were. Others of us, it was a lifelong thing. It was a very gentle thing. You go to Africa, that's the thing that strikes you, how quickly day goes into night and how quickly night moves into day. It's sudden, and yet here it's gradual. God works like that. These people were going somewhere. This was the promised land. There was a future. God is going to restore them. And so it is for us. It's for the same with the Church of God. But then it was a contemporary restoration as well, wasn't it? Not only was it a creative restoration, it was a contemporary restoration. We're not really interested in a history lesson. Have you come along this evening to learn about the history of Ai and the historicity or otherwise of the city, what it was, and kind of ancient Hebrew battle tactics? No. Because this is a picture of what God is doing today. He's moving us on. There is a promised land for us. We are going to die one day, and there is a new heavens and a new earth. There is a future. There is a destiny. And God is moving us all on to that destiny. In verse 29, a bad king is hung in a tree and a land is possessed. Do you see that, verse 29? He hung the king of Ai on a tree and left them there until evening. How different in the New Testament. Here we have a bad king is hung and the people are led into the promised land. And Calvary, we have a good king was hung. And here we find that he was left till evening and stones were thrown on top of him. And a large pile of rocks is over it, which remains to this day. Whereas the exact opposite was true of Jesus. He was hung in a tree, but after 3 days, he rose again. This is the powerhouse of the church, the resurrected Jesus. A pile of stones could not hold him to this day. He is alive and alive forevermore. And because of his life, there is life in us because of his future. And there is a future in the church. There is a brightness. There is, to use one of my favorite words, a vitality. There is an energy and there is a future. These are the plans that God has for us corporately. God is in the move. And he will fill the whole earth with his glory. Moving on from defeat. Is God speaking to someone in particular this evening? The wonderful thing is, God does move us on. Our task is not just to sit and survive. Our plan is to move with God and the whole world being filled with his glory. Nothing will stop him. Postmodernism, spiritual apathy, the church is in the move. And even in this town of Inverness, the churches that are on the move, the churches that are growing, are churches that take these things seriously. All the others are turning into museums. Has there been a defeat in your life this week? Next week, if God is on our side, is not part of an unending disaster, but it is a building block on the road to the promised land.